Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Anna's Journey. I am your show's host, Anna Renault, and to find out more about me, please visit my website, annarenault.com, and that's A-N-N-A-R-E-N-A-U-L-T. Thanks for listening to Anna's Journey. It's going to be another exciting show today as we talk with Chanel Simmons from Nell's Tax Help. You can visit her website at nellstaxhelp.com. We're going to be talking with Chanel in just a moment. Before we jump in the show, I always announce our airtime sponsor, and today that is Jane Rainier, a canine wellness specialist, owner of Lucky Dog Wellness. And you can go to Jane's website, LuckyDogWellness, LuckyDogWellness.com. Jane has been treating dogs with chronic illness and diseases, certainly dogs that are showing signs of aging, and even helping dogs who are having trouble adjusting to a new home. Maybe they're a new pup or a rescue dog. Jane can help. Go to her website and find out lots of more information. Jane also teaches pet first aid. If you want to be certified as a pet first aid person, you can get trained in Maryland at both Anne Arundel Community College and Hartford Community College. I know she's totally booked for classes in September at the colleges, so if you're interested, certainly contact one of the colleges to get a seat in the classroom. All right, I also have a quick announcement, and we'll talk more about this at the end of the show, and that's the On Purpose Woman Community 6th Annual Conference. It's coming up the end of October. It's going to be held down near the Baltimore Washington International Airport, BWI Airport, in Linthicum, Maryland. So go to JinnyRobertson.com, click on Purpose Woman Magazine, and there's a two-page spread about the conference. It will give you the dates, which I believe are the 27th and 28th of October, and it lists the workshops and some of the speakers and the entertainment, and it is just going to be absolutely awesome. And it's interesting, I think, to see how the magazine is available free online, On Purpose Woman Magazine. All right, let's see if I can get my microphone buttons to work this morning and bring my guest on the air. Good morning, Chanel. How are you?
Good morning, Anna. How are you?
Oh, I'm here. I'm up. I'm out. I've been just a little bit crazy this morning. For some reason, my body decided to wake up at 4 a.m., so I'm ready for lunch.
Yeah, pretty much.
But there are those kinds of days where you just, for whatever reason, your body says, I'm not tired anymore, and I'm going to wake up, and so here I sit. But I always have plenty to do, plenty to read, plenty to work on, so I've been busy. And I've been looking at all the kinds of things that entrepreneurs, especially small business entrepreneurs, are always worried about: our taxes. And I was looking at the calendar. It's August. Nobody
yep.
really wants to think about taxes in August, but yet it really is an important time of the year as we get ready to move into the final quarter of the year to look and see where your business is. Are you on track for where you want to be? Are there things you need to adjust, especially with the holidays coming up? But then certainly getting ready, because January rolls around really quick, especially after the holidays, and then it's tax time, and you have to fill out all those nice forms and send them to the IRS. especially if you want to get a refund. So
well,
I
actually,
think today,
Anna,
go ahead.
I was going to say, actually, Anna, what's funny is that you say August isn't a time. In the tax world and for some business owners and other people, October is our second wave. I don't think a lot of people know that. For those people back in April who filed those extensions, yeah, October 15th is around the corner. So if you haven't filed yet, you really should have taxes on your mind right now because it's October 15th will be here and there's no more extensions. So, yeah, I definitely want to put that out there that October 15th is just around the corner. Today is August 16th, so you have literally less than 2 months to get together anything that you haven't gotten together, because let's be real, most of us put the extension in April, went on vacation back in June and July and have not thought about it, but October is coming up around the corner. So if you haven't gotten with your tax professional yet, I know I'm definitely available, and this is that time to get that in, because there won't be any more extensions after October 15th, and if you haven't filed by then, it'll be officially late.
And therefore, the IRS very nicely will say, we're going to give you a fine or a fee for being late, right?
Correct. Yes, they will.
I guess it's partially because I've never filed for an extension that I don't often think about that. But you make a very good point that April 15th rolls around, and for whatever reason, we're not ready to file the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of paperwork are people not ready to file when April 15th rolls around that they ask for the extension?
Good point. So you might, it could be something just as simple as, let's say you received your first W-2 back at the end of January, and maybe there were some errors. So maybe HR is taking a long time to fix your W-2. So you might file an extension there because you're waiting for your corrected W-2 to be fixed. You might have a company. You might work with a company and your owner, and they, for whatever reasons, haven't given you your K-1 so you can report your transactions on your return. So then you might file an extension. Or, you know, some people, they just want to file an extension because they might have other bank accounts that might keep track of, let's say, their rental income, and versus them keeping track of the information on a month-to-month basis or even a quarterly basis, they try to do it all at the end of the year or in January. And it's a lot of transactions to go through, and it's just not enough time. So they just need more time. You might be out of the country, you know, or an emergency may have happened. You may have had experienced a loss, let's say, at the end of March. So what you thought was going to be a simple return ended up being, is going to be maybe a little more complicated than you're used to. So you just need more time. So whatever your reason is, you can file an extension. They don't ask you what the reason is for the extension, but you can file one. And what happens is they'll say, okay, usually by default, they'll give you 6 months from the due date. So that puts it back to April 15th. So as long as they receive a return October 15th. So as long as they receive a return by October the 15th, you will not incur late penalties. What's great is Maryland is one of those states where as long as you file the extension with the IRS, Maryland will also be notified to say you filed an extension. So now you also get 6 months to file with Maryland as well and not incur penalties. You don't have to file two extensions. So that's really good. But if you don't file by October 15th, now at this point you will be considered late. And regardless of your situation, you might still have a very valid reason, but you would have to prove to them now why you couldn't make it to October 15th to remove any penalties you might have incurred by not meeting the extended due date.
Now, I know when I had my house fire in 1988, my tax person did say that I did have that option, and we weren't sure if I was going to be able to recoup a W-2 and some other forms, some other receipts and verifications for deductions from Blue Cross and Blue Shield and a few other places. But fortunately, I was able to get everything. Once somebody heard that it was due to a house fire and everything had burned up, they were really pretty good about getting me copies of everything that I needed. And we made April 1 my deadline. And I was just so relieved that it was one less thing hanging over my head. I can't imagine going April 15th all the way to October 15th with that hanging over my head. Now, I know one of the questions a lot of people have, they think if they file for the extension on April 15th, it means they don't have to pay taxes due. Do they or don't they have to pay on April the 15th if you
They do have to pay. That is a great point that you bring up. A lot of people do not realize that by you filing the extension, that does not mean that you have an extended time to file a return. However, if you think you're going to owe additional taxes by April 15th for the previous year, that payment of tax is still due on April the 15th. So what ends up happening is what a lot of people who know that they're going to owe something, they usually send the extension plus a payment. So that way they could have time to still file the return, but the payment is sitting there. Because what ends up happening is if you don't submit the payment, even with the extension, even though the return itself is not considered late and you won't suffer late penalties, you would be subject to interest as well as estimated tax penalties. So those are the two things that you always, and they can go so far to say that your extension was invalid. So like depending on sometimes what agent you're dealing with, if it went that far to an agent, they could determine that your extension was invalid and still try to incur late penalties because of the fact you did not send in the payment. So the payment is extremely important. If you had taxes withheld throughout the year, though, and you feel that those withholdings were enough and you think that you're going to get a potential refund, then you don't have to send a payment. And so, like, if you know that your job or if you made estimated tax payments throughout the year and you feel that you had enough withheld with them during the year, them as well as your state, if you owe state as well as local, then you don't have to send in a payment. But if you believe that you're going to end up getting a tax bill, or if you think you will, you're not quite sure, get with a professional. We can probably come up with a rough estimate. And if it looks like you will probably owe something, it's just better safe to send in that payment to alleviate yourself from other penalties and interest.
Now, let's say you send in a payment and it's not really enough once you fill out all the papers. You now owe extra. Are they going to charge you interest and late fees on the extra that you did not pay?
Interest, most likely, yes. It's very hard to get interest relieved from whenever you owe it. There's situations where you can get a rebate on it, but it's very hard to abate interest, and there's only usually very special circumstances when that happens. But penalties, it depends. If you sent in, let's say, the year prior to the year that you need to file, so let's say this current tax season, we're still filing 2016 returns. So let's say in 2015, the amount that you owe was $10,000. If you sent in $10,000 again or throughout the year you withheld $10,000, And you filed your extension, and then let's say you ended up doing your return before October, and you found out you actually owed $12,000 for the year versus the $10,000 that you paid, you would be fine because you sent in 100% of what you owed from the last time you knew for a fact of what you owed the year prior. So there's ways to relieve yourself from the estimated tax penalty. So you always got to just consider, you know, what did I pay the year prior when I did actually file my return? Am I able to send in that much? If you can, then good. Now you've relieved yourself of the estimated tax penalty. But if you can't, and let's say that let's say that in 2015 you actually did $5,000, or let's say you did $15,000, you sent in 10 during 2016, so that's a $5,000 difference from that 100%. It's not 100% anymore. And, you know, like, again, you owe 12, then, yes, they're going to hit you with the estimated tax penalty on that $2,000 difference, so, and as well as interest. So,
and this is, again, one of those really good examples of when you need to be talking with a tax person, somebody
yes.
who really knows the rules, really knows what it's going to cost you if you don't do it properly. So let's jump into what we were going to talk about today in terms of small business people. You had a couple of topics that you wanted to bring forward because, again, when you're an entrepreneur, there are so many different kinds, so many different businesses. What is on the top of your list for today?
So today I wanted to talk about side businesses. A lot of people now, especially with the economy, they're trying to find other ways to supplement their income. So they may have a W-2 job. They may have their own business that's a booming business, is doing well, is pretty well established, and they decide to take on another venture. One of the things that a lot of people have questions about is how do I report my side business? Do I treat it as a business? Do I treat it as a hobby? How do you make that determination? And what would be the tax consequences or benefits of treating it either as a hobby versus a business? So that's kind of what I wanted to hit on today. And one of the first things I kind of wanted to get into when it comes to that whole hobby versus business determination is the first thing you want to ask yourself is this something that is my livelihood or could potentially be my livelihood? If your answer to that is no, that doesn't mean that it's not a business. So I want that to be clear, because some people say, well, no, then it's a hobby for sure because I have a W-2 job. Okay, but it still can be technically a business. All because of the fact that you have a W-2 job doesn't make it any less so a business. It's just your part-time business, if you will. So with that
said.
Let's
give this example. I have a friend mm-hmm. that I just talked to mm-hmm. yesterday who has W-2 job. She works 40, mm-hmm. 45 hours every week. On the side, she has been knitting, and she sells these beautiful scarf things that you hang around your neck and accessorize your wardrobe. She sells them. She's making relatively good money on that. Now, is mm-hmm. that her hobby of knitting, or is that really a side job?
And I love your example. I absolutely love that. That's a great example. So something like that, that's a wonderful example. It could honestly be both. And I'm going to be clear with that. It could be something that it's not something that necessarily she is trying to make money with, but like you said, she's doing really well with it. So then at that point, you got to now sit and say to yourself, okay, so what does that mean to me as far as tax dollars? So I'm going to give you the example of the hobby versus the business. When you treat it as a hobby, what happens is the gross income. So let's say your friend is selling these beautiful scarves. Let's say she made $1,000 for 2016 doing these scarves. And let's just say her expenses, because it's just yarn, is let's say she only had expenses of $300, okay? So as a hobby, she would have to report the gross amount of $1,000 on the front of her return, which will bump up her AGI. And then hopefully your friend who knits itemizes, because if she itemizes, she can deduct those expenses on her Schedule A. But if she doesn't itemize and she takes just the standard deduction, she loses all $300 of those expenses that she paid, but she would still be required to report that income. Now, that's when you report it as a hobby.
Hobby.
Mm-hmm. So now, but let's just say she did itemize. So let's say she itemized. So if she did itemize, those $300 in expenses that she had for the yarn is now subject to what they call the 2% floor of the limit. So you have to take off 2% of the AGI, her adjusted gross income, off of that $300 before you can even claim any of it. So we're gonna say, regardless of the W-2 and all that, we know she had other income. We're just to keep it simple, we know she made $1,000. 2% of that $1,000 is $20. So of that $300, we would have to subtract that $20 now, because that would be for, just to keep it simple, that would be 2% of her AGI, her adjusted gross income. So then she would only be able to deduct $280 against that $1,000. So she lost $20 of expenses. Now, if she treats it as a business, though, and she reported it on Schedule C, she would now be able to take that $1,000 and offset it by the full $300, and she would report $700 on the front of return. And her AGI versus going up by $1,000 would only go up by $700. That $700 would, the downside of that, though, is the $700 would be subject to self-employment tax. But granted, she would be able to keep all of her expenses, and depending on other factors, it may be something that's beneficial. And that's when you would have to definitely get with a tax professional like myself, and we can play with the numbers and find out what would be the best benefit to you. But I want people to understand, when it is a hobby, as far as in the tax world, what happens is hobby means all income received gets reported on the front of return. It bumps up your adjusted gross income, also known as an AGI, and you never want to fully bump up that number if you can because that number is also the number that's used for the limit for your medical expense deduction, is used for the limits for how much of a loss you can take for rental income, and a modified version of it. It's used for a lot of other things in as far as your deductions and credits. And that's a number that, if you can keep it as low as you possibly can, is usually to your benefit. So someone who's usually doing well, you will be usually advised to try to see if you can go ahead and report it as a business. However, if it is doing well, like your friend, there's that self-employment tax that's out there. And self-employment tax in of itself is not an ugly thing. I don't want people to walk around and think, oh, self-employment tax is horrible. Self-employment tax is important because when you, like you said, when you're a small business owner, it goes towards your retirement. You know, the self-employment tax, a portion of it, 6% of it, or actually, you know, since you're self-employed, 12% of it is going towards you for Social Security. So, you know, don't think of self-employment tax as an evil thing. It's going towards, you know, your retirement benefits for later. So, a lot
it's
of
an important little detail, again, that if you're trying to use QuickBooks or one of those online places, they may or may not be asking you that, or may not be able to explain that to you, and you don't know that important tiny little piece that's going to save you in the long run. Now, let's say that she's doing this knitting and she's not doing so well, and she makes maybe only $500. Is there a limit of how much you have to report if you don't make over a certain amount?
Nope. So
you
even
just
as
report.
Even as a hobby. Yeah, even as a hobby, she has to report any income she receives from it. So even if she made a dollar, by law, she would have to report that dollar. It's just like gambling. By law, I tell people all the time, with gambling, you know, like you do the scratch off. By law, technically, even though it's just a dollar that you won, you're legally supposed to report those winnings. They just only – what I think a lot of people get confused with is they say, oh, well, I heard it's $600. No, what that is the casino or if she was working for someone as an independent contractor, they don't have to send out an information return, usually a 1099 or with gambling, a W-2G. They are not required to complete one at a certain dollar amount. However, regardless of what you actually earn, you're are supposed to honestly and truthfully report all earnings.
You made a good point, especially for any of my listeners who are the online bloggers. I worked for a number of years putting articles on examiner.com, and that was one of those companies that they didn't give me a W or a 1099 until I hit that $600 limit.
Uh-huh.
Because under that, they didn't consider it taxable income. And it's an important distinction.
Yeah, it's not that they don't consider it taxable, but they're just not required to. Yeah, that's where people get confused. It's not, I want to dismiss that myth. Anything under $600 is not that it's not taxable. It's just that they are not required to send you a 1099, but you are still required to report that income. I just want to put it out for those of you who are confused about that. You are more than welcome to look up Internal Revenue Code 61. All means of income is considered taxable, and then what the rest of that code section is an extensive list of what is considered taxable, and it literally says except where it says elsewhere in the code. So that means if you have a dollar, you're technically supposed to report it. Even though you didn't get a 1099 for them, you're supposed to report that because you earned that money.
And there again, I know I went through this many, many times with the vendors at the indoor flea market. Yes, it's a flea market. Yes, whatever you're selling may already be a used item. You're selling it. You're making income. You need to charge sales tax, and you need to report your income.
Absolutely.
I know I gave out many receipts when they would pay their monthly vendor fee, depending on the size of the space they had. Most of our booths were 8 foot by 10 foot, which is basically the size of a lot of bathrooms. They're not that big. It's still your little shop. It still contains your product, and you're selling it, and you're making money on it. Here's your rent receipt. You need to report to the IRS, and you need to file your sales tax. I mean, that's just the fact of life when you're in business. You have to go to Towson here in Baltimore County and get a license. It cost $17 back then. But if you didn't have the license, the fine was $500. It was worth it to go to Towson and get the license. But it was also a tax-deductible business expense. So you've got your license based on what you're selling. You've got your rent receipt. You need to talk to a tax person to see if you have other deductible expenses, especially if you're selling some new items. Maybe you went to Oriental Trading and bought 1,000 flags, and you're now selling these flags. You're making a profit on it. You can certainly deduct on one of those schedules, Schedule A, Schedule C, whatever, that you paid for these 1,000 flags. Now you're selling them. Now you've got income. You've got to report these things. These might be little side businesses. You're working Monday through Friday for this company, but on Saturday and Sunday you're at this flea market. You're making money. You've got to report that. Right?
Yes, you do. And you brought up many, many things. So I'm gonna try to break some of those things down. and just so people are clear, Schedule A is the itemized deduction schedule. That's usually where a lot of your personal items go, such as your home mortgage interest and such. But that's also the same schedule they use to deduct hobby expenses, as well as gambling winnings and losses. Winnings go on the front of the return on the 1040 side. Schedule C is your business returns. Your business schedule is the one that where you would report, like I said, even if it's just a dollar, you would report that dollar, and you would report it on the front of returns if it's a hobby as well, but you would report just that dollar on a Schedule C, and then you get to report all of your expenses if you only made a dollar. Like you were saying, sales tax. Sales tax is a very big consideration for side businesses. A lot of side businesses don't realize that there's a word called nexus. And nexus, for the most part, all that means is that if you are selling a product that is usually tangible, so anything that you can touch, it doesn't even matter if it's new, used, whatever the case may be. If it is tangible, you are usually required by your state and sometimes local authorities. Some states, Maryland isn't one as of right now, but some states have it even where the local area, like the county or the city, might charge an additional tax on that item that you're selling. But you're supposed to collect sales tax for every transaction that you sell. With that said, when you collect it, then you report it. It's really just that simple. and you go and you get a sales tax number. Now, depending upon what you are selling, you might be tax exempt, and that would be something where, again, you would get with a tax professional if you're not sure yourself, and it would be determined if what you sell is something that doesn't require for you to collect sales tax. But usually the rule of thumb is if you are established in that state and you are selling a tangible, something you can touch item, you are required to collect sales tax and then report it and hand the money that you collect over to the state. That's usually the typical rule of thumb. Now, the question becomes, because a lot of people now, especially with the help of the internet, they're like, well, what about those things that I sell in another state? If you're not physically present in that state, you don't have to pay a sales tax to them. However, the next step that you have to look at is, are you affiliated with someone who has a presence in that state? And that's where a lot of people get into trouble. So, like, let's talk about Avon. Avon's been around forever. And Avon will probably have a physical presence in every single state. Therefore, a sales transaction that, even though you're probably doing it online and you yourself is not physically there, you are probably going to have to hit that customer that's, let's say, in Wyoming that purchases from you with a sales tax, because I'm sure Avon has a presence in Wyoming. So you would have to collect sales tax from them, and then you would have to report that sales tax that you collected from just that one customer to Wyoming. So this is where a lot of people now, I know some minds right now are probably like, oh my gosh, I'm selling LuLaRoe on Facebook to everybody and anyone who would sell, you know, who would buy it. Am I now required to probably file sales tax everywhere? Probably. If they have nexus in that state, and I know that company is relatively new and is blowing up everywhere, if they have a what they call nexus in that state, you most likely may have to. And that's something that, like I said, you can get with your tax professional, or you can contact that company that you're affiliated with, and they might know. But you always have to consider that sales tax obligation, because if for any reason someone was to come back and come audit you, because like I said, audits aren't just the IRS. The states do audits as well. If they found out you were doing a lot of sales in their state, and let's say you're in Florida, but you're selling to everyone under the sun in Georgia might come and pay you a visit and say, hey, you know, I noticed a lot of people are buying your products. We haven't seen any sales tax from you. What's going on? So you never want to get in this kind of trouble when it comes to the sales tax.
And then the question becomes, with sales tax, do you charge Maryland sales tax since you live in Maryland? in that 6%, or are you looking at California or somewhere else where the sales tax might be 8 or 9%? Which sales tax are you charging?
I'm glad you asked that. You would charge the sales tax in accordance to the state that's receiving the item. Yes. So you can, I'm sure some of you right now are like, oh my goodness, what have I gotten myself into if you're doing any sales outside of your state? Because think about it, you're going to report back to them that, you know, I had X amount of sales in your state. I collected this much money from what we sold. And, you know, your state, and, you know, when you talk about California, Georgia, Ohio, they are some of the most complicated sales and local, you know, state and local taxes where, you know.
Exactly, which is why I brought California up, because I had a friend who actually just retired actually as of December 31st. And there again, trying to decide when to close your business, when do you do certain things. And she fortunately has had a tax person the whole 15 years. It was an online business, and it has all these little glitches that she had not thought of when she first opened it. I think the first year or two, she probably made some of these mistakes, and the tax person said, you need to track where you're selling this product to and where she was getting it from. She was getting product from China, India, and someplace else, Germany or somewhere. It was three countries overseas that she was getting product from. And she had to be very clear about, you know, what she was bringing into the country and fees that she had to pay to get the product. Now, fortunately, eventually she found a gentleman in, I think it was Arizona or New Mexico, that had really nice gems, and she started using him more and got away from some of the overseas stuff. But it really complicated what looked like a very simple business. And then came the whole sales tax thing. And it really is something that, at least in my opinion, and I'm sure yours, you don't want trouble with the IRS. You really don't.
Well, with the sales tax, that's going to be states. That's going to be states and local. IRS don't meddle in that. they don't meddle in that. That's the state. That's your state, and that's your local authority. So, like, that's your counties and or cities. So, yeah, IRS don't meddle with the sales tax portion of it. That's going to be
It's still the total realm. You don't want tax problems. You don't want to get into deep debt owing money to any of these entities. When you're a small business, you want to have a nice product. You want to have a nice customer base. You want to have a nice little income, whether it be full-time or part-time, whatever your goal is. You really want to be able to do that. We're going to be running out of time here in a few minutes. Tell them how they can get in touch with you.
Hi. Okay, so my company is No Tax Help LLC. My direct line is 443-868-7629. Again, that's 443-868-7629. My website is back up.
Yay.
Right. It was down for some time. I actually fixed, Anna, you'll laugh at this. I tell people maybe in another life I might get into web design, because I actually did all the design of the website. So if you guys that took a lot of hard work. But it's done. I'm so happy it's up. And you can book the appointments directly through the website as well. The website is Nels Tax Help, spelled NELSTAXHELP.com. You can book a one-on-one. You will always talk to me directly when you book these one-on-ones, and I will be more than glad to, you know, entertain any questions that you have about yourself personally, your personal tax situation. But, yeah, you can call me or you can book an appointment directly with the website. So,
that is
yeah.
fantastic. Now,
and,
we are going to
be. Also, like me on. So I'm sorry, Anna. Like me on Facebook. I do be on Facebook as well. Nell's Tax Help is on Facebook. I plan to start doing more talks there pretty soon. And Instagram. So, yeah. The social media
very
club,
good.
Right?
right. And that's another piece of the puzzle. When you're doing your taxes and whatever, you need to look. Are you paying any hosting fees for anything like a website? Are you paying any advertising fees to Facebook to advertise your business? These are all little things that, especially small businesses, oh, it was only $10. Oh, it was only $20. It adds up over a year's time. And even if it is only $10, it's $10 less, and you might want to think about making sure that you know to report it on your taxes. Now, Chanel, thanks so much for being with me again this morning. We're going to be back on the air. We're going to be back on the air again on Wednesday the 30th with another installment, and we can decide then if there are some questions that have come in that we might want to follow up with another show just to answer questions, especially as we're facing the October 15th deadline. Are there some things that maybe we need to look at in September to help people say, you know, let's not get into trouble. Let's get the stuff done. But thank you so
Absolutely.
Much for being with
oh,
us.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so very welcome. And, you know, like you said, I loved your last example. I love that last example of your friend where she had something very simple with the online business. Yet when it comes to what you consider to be a small side business, you might want to really start looking at treating it, even if you do ultimately treat it as a hobby, as a business. And sometimes that means having to pay sales tax in addition to income taxes, in addition to self-employment taxes, if you, in fact, you know, decide to treat it as more so as a business. All because
and she did eventually do that because then those self-employment taxes are now, at the age of 68, she has decided to retire, sell the business, which was another whole issue, and it really is paying off in the long run. Thanks a lot for being with us. We will be back with you on August the 30th. We have been talking with Chanel Simmons, who is the owner of Nell's Tax Help, and she has answers to so many little problems that entrepreneurs run into that you may really want to think about giving her a call, asking her a few questions, making an appointment. 443-868-7629 or going to her website www.nellstaxhelp.com. We want to thank Jane Rainier for being our airtime sponsor. Jane Rainier is 410-961-3542 here in the Baltimore area, in Arundel County, Baltimore County. She goes all the way down to Gambrills. She really does travel the 95 corridor. She loves to help ensure that our four-legged canine best friends are being well cared for. Jane also wrote a book. She has a little marketing assistant called Fifi, which is a little doll dog, and Fifi has friends. She really is pushing responsible pet ownership, especially through children. She also teaches pet first aid in two of the community colleges. She has a lot to share. Don't forget to look at GinnyRobertson.com, GinnyRobertson, GinnyRobertson.com. Look up On Purpose Woman Magazine and find the details for the 6th annual On Purpose Woman Conference. It'll be near the BWI Airport at the end of October. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey. I will be back on the air on Friday talking again about some financial issues This time we're going to be talking with Laura Johnson, and it's a little bit more of a personal nature in terms of financial planning, but also in terms of businesses. So we have a couple of topics that we're going to be talk about on Friday. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey. All shows are recorded and available for replay 24 hours a day. Take care and have a great day.